Welcome to Unspoken Conversations with Candace, where we talk openly about taboo topics in order to spark difficult and uncomfortable conversations, where we allow a safe place for anyone who has had trauma to be heard. Unspoken Conversations with Candace is about speaking your truth by using your voice because you matter. Each season on my podcast has its purpose, and for season 3, it is dedicated to all male survivors. I want to express my sincerest gratitude and acknowledge Jeff Chugum. He was curious to learn more about my podcast. Once I explained my vision for season 3, he wanted to help. Thank you, Jeff, for your sponsorship and support. Special thanks to Jesse Daso for assisting in the planning, logistics, and helping to invite guests for season 3. And last but not least, Neil Perek, my season 3 co-host. Neil arranged to have Digimentors produce the show on a pro bono basis. Digimentors is helping me step out of my comfort zone by implementing video production. This form of media stream will be available broadly via social media and our websites. I am extremely grateful to work with Neil and Digimentors. If you are interested in a high-quality, virtual, or hybrid event, I encourage you to reach out to Digimentors. They work with nonprofits, higher education, corporate partners, international organizations, and others. It does not matter where you are based or how big or small your business is. They also do social and digital consulting, training, workshops, videography, recruitment, and more. Check out the links in the show notes for their contact information. Trigger warning. Before we begin, I want to make you aware that we are going to be talking about some very sensitive issues. All of our guests are male survivors of sexual assault. They will be sharing very personal stories about rape, incest, sexual abuse, and/or assault. Please take a moment and make sure you are in an appropriate place to watch and/or listen. Some of the descriptions may be explicit and have the potential of bringing up a range of emotions. It is more than okay for you to hit pause and come back to this later if you find that you need to. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Unspoken Conversations with Candace. I am your host, and I'm happy to have my co-host, Neil, with me during season 3, which is dedicated to all male survivors. Just want to thank Neil, as always, for being on this journey with me, Neil. And I'm excited to introduce our guest today for this month's episode. Aren't you excited? You got to meet him in person?
Yeah, I met him a couple months ago at the Hope Shining Blue event. I was so thrilled to come out there, and I was thrilled to meet him, and I was thrilled to be out there with you. This was a couple months back, but it was great to be there.
Great event. So I'm going to go ahead and introduce Sean to the audience, to the listeners here. So Sean Hipman was born and raised in Oconomowoc, Wisconsin. Sean graduated with a finance Spanish degree from UW-Whitewater. He has worked for 23 years as a financial advisor for Raymond James. He studied Spanish in Spain and played soccer at Whitewater. Sean has traveled to 27 countries. He enjoys playing and watching sports, scuba diving, hiking mountains, and music festivals. He began his healing journey officially at the Aurora Healing Center in 2010 and co-wrote a book titled Healing Happens in 2014. And in 2017, Sean was a Thrive Award honoree at the Hope Shining Blue. So I wanted to make sure I made that plug because that is a very important award to receive. So I just want to welcome Sean to the show today. So welcome, Sean. I'm happy to have you here today.
Thank you both. It's good to see you again. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yes, absolutely. So Sean and I, we became connected, as I mentioned in his bio, with the Healing Center. We are both members of the Giving Circle, the Aurora Advocacy Services Giving Circle, which means that we donate monetarily to the important cause of raising funds for sexual and domestic violence across the state of Wisconsin. And so that's how we connected. And then knowing a little bit about Sean, and he shared his story. And then, of course, the healing happens in the book. And I read his chapter in the book, and we just immediately connected as survivors, but I say thrivers. I was also awarded the Thrive Award, and I feel like I'm in this elite class. So Sean, I'm just so happy to be part of that group with you because you are a survivor, you are a thriver in life, and I'm just so glad that we're connected. And
You know, when we first met and we were planning the season, you know, you were one of the first people I thought about. I want Sean on this show. So again, I just want to say thank you for being here and really want to turn it over to you to share your story with the audience, with the listeners about, you know, your journey and the type of abuse as a survivor, as a thriver, so that others know that they're not alone. And, you know, when they hear other stories, resonates with them, and that's what allows them to feel like they have that safe place. So I'm going to turn it over to you to start to share your story with the audience, with the listeners.
Well, this goes back to 1984. Summer of 1984, I had just finished the second grade, I believe. And I love those photos.
They're great photos.
Yeah, that was right around the time.
Who's all in the photos? Can you explain the photos?
So that one on the left, that's my little sister and I. And that's probably, I'd say that we're 6 and 4 there. The next one is my best friend, Jason. Ever since probably that age, like right around first grade, second grade. And Jason's still one of my very best friends today. And that last one, that's in the 5th grade. I'm probably 10 or 11 there. And I'm dancing with Amber Knight. Cool plug for Amber. And that was my first ever crush. So yeah, some very, I'll tell you, I was every bit as sweet as I looked. I was really a good kid. And I got into mischief here and there, but generally speaking, I was very active, athletic, and just a pretty good kid.
I mean, I can tell just from the smiles that you just had a lot of fun.
No doubt.
And then, yeah. And then I know, you know, when we talked about your story, you know, you mentioned you're from a small town, mm-hmm. you know, and then it was the abuse and how that all started. And I believe it was you, from what you shared, is babysitter, someone that babysat you.
Right. Actually, the other assignment. So, you know, we're kind of on our summer break and both of my parents work and a lot, you know, we're a dual income family. My mother was a nurse. My dad was kind of a builder. And so, yeah, my folks hired this babysitter from kind of the other side of town. And really, she wasn't really that attentive, but she started to bring this other boy along and he was about 11. And I remember his name was Shannon. He was this very prototypical kind of freckles, redhead. He was the first non-adult person to ever use like curse words. So right away, when I meet this person, I'm introduced to kind of new language. And at some level, it's like, ew, that's kind of gross. But then it's also kind of interesting when you're a little boy and you hear curse words for the first time. So this is kind of how he introduced himself to my world. And at 11 years old, you know, he had authority in a lot of ways. I felt like, well, I can hang with him or I'm cool enough to whatever and everything like that. And so what ended up happening is he started rummaging around my parents' home in a way I never thought to do. And he found a stack of Playboys, actually, my dad's Playboy stash. And so this is kind of what catalyzed, what started everything. And it went from that. And of course, he introduced me to those magazines as well. So all of a sudden, I'm introduced to this world of these beautiful women and my body is reacting. I'm excited. I'm seeing something brand new. But as you can imagine, there's something within me that tells me that this is something I should want or that. So the way I've described it is like it opened up some doors that probably weren't supposed to be open for a while. And I've used the term sexualized. So I'd say I got sexualized very early. A switch gets flipped and all of a sudden I, for the first time in my life, have lust, you know? So that's kind of how it starts out. And it sort of advances or progresses from there to then him using the term jacking off. And that's a, you know, kind of a playground term for masturbation. And so that sort of thing kind of started. And again, it's just he and I with these magazines. And again, my body now is reacting and I'm equal parts, you know, nervous as I am excited, you know, because this is all new. And again, I'm only 7 years old and he's 11 and it's just kind of how it was. And, you know, a few days later, it becomes this boy, his idea that, well, we should reenact. So there was one issue in particular where there's actually cinematic sexual acts in the magazine. in that issue. And historically, Playboy didn't have that kind of thing. But these were scenes from movies, and movies from that vintage, I think, with like 9.5 Weeks was one of them, and maybe another one that, you know, some of the older audience members might remember those. But yeah, that's kind of how it got to the next level, was these images of actual sex occurring on these pages sort of inspired him to say, hey, you've got a 5-year-old sister. She's a girl. We should try some of this stuff basically with her. And that's when things got a little interesting, because now all of a sudden there's my little sister who I was kind of like probably sworn to protect, or I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there was some expectation that there'd be some protection by my parents or something like that. But of course, being only 7 years old, I didn't know any better. So we started sort of down this pathway, and thank God for my little sister. And I guess thank God for just whatever, because without going into too much detail, I'll just say that nothing really ever completely happened in terms of intercourse and in terms of these things, but plenty of inappropriate touching and so just inappropriate intentions did happen. And, you know, later on in life, you learn how common it is for kids, whether they're neighbor kids, friends, cousins, and maybe even siblings, to play doctor and things like that. Like later on in life, you learn that that's kind of part of being a kid. But at that point, my 7-year-old self did not know any better. And all I knew was I had this body reaction. I was excited. And again, thank God my sister said, no, that would hurt. And this boy kept pushing for this to actually have intercourse with her. And because he was, and this is kind of where things get a little closer to home, is where he's like, well, I'm 11. She thinks it'll hurt because I'm older, you know, I'm bigger, you should try. And I just said, well, no, she said it would hurt. And so we're not doing that. But this boy, he kept pushing. Now, this is where things kind of turn a corner in my mind. And I remember this very, very well, especially recently, because I've really dug into this stuff deeply and it's really helped me. Essentially, it becomes, he really won't let it go. And it's day after day, we should try today. And the next day, we should try today. Now, this whole interaction probably happens over the span of maybe 3 weeks, but it feels like an eternity, like a lot of this stuff can. But very quickly, I kind of learned that I don't think he's going to let it go. And honestly, I had a decision to make. I knew I had to get rid of this kid, and I had no idea how. He's 4 years older, and the babysitter has no idea any of this stuff is going on. I mean, she's out sunbathing in the yard or something like that. So one day, and I don't know if he actually did this or not, but I ended up convincing myself that he stole some of my Legos. And as a little boy, I guess I needed to rationalize my action of what I was about to do. But one day I accused him of stealing some of my Legos. He denied it. We got into like a verbal sort of back and forth, and I punched him in the stomach as hard as I could. And me being at 7 years old and just a skinny little weasel of a kid, and him being 11, I was really afraid that he would pound me. And I don't know what happened. I've never punched anybody before. I must have hit him in just the right spot, because I knocked the wind out of him and he cried and he never came back. And then I had to face the wrath of my father, who now had to find a new babysitter because of my act. The babysitter wasn't going to show up anymore. And that's kind of the story as it pertains to Shannon. And again, nothing really happened, but I would say we're both compromised. And for me, yes, I was what I call sexualized. And from that day forward, I thought about sex and I thought about naked women. And I thought about things way earlier than is probably normal or healthy for a young man.
So sorry, Sean.
Yeah.
Yeah. So sorry.
Well, it is, as I've gone through the healing process, and whether it's men's groups or just reading forums, you know, online, any number of outreach, the important thing is to remind yourself or to realize how common these things really are. And that's not to downplay, you know, pain and trauma, they hurt and they curb our growth. They curb all kinds of wonderful things of a young man's upbringing. But at the same time, for me, the pathway towards liberation from all of this shame that I'd cast on myself. And I'll go into that in a minute. And this guilt, right, was really to remind myself that, no, this happens with 1 in 6 boys, and that's 16, 17% most days. So where it's very easy to isolate yourself in your trauma and isolate yourself because of your shame, it really is the biggest mistake, and who would know any better? But the best thing you can do is just realize that you're really not alone and it's not your fault. Who would really hold a 7-year-old accountable for this stuff? And here's the really remarkable part. There's more to the story, but in my healing journey and in my sort of what they call it recovery, but I'll call it healing and survivor journey, one of the pivotal things that I realized was, in order to give myself compassion, I also had to give Shannon compassion. He's 11. He learned it somewhere.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. So if I'm 7 and I'm not expected to know better, what would make me think an 11-year-old would be expected to know better? Mm-hmm. You know, naturally, he didn't wake up one day and just decide, oh, I'm going to go ruin some kid's life and his sister too. You know, I just think if we really search for the truth, we know that this boy was probably acting out on things that he had learned in maybe a not so nice way. And who knows? But I just think that level of compassion has really helped me as well. Like that level of just being able to kind of like forgive and just be like, you know, what am I going to do?
Sean, forgiveness is something that we've talked a lot about on this show. A lot of our guests have talked about that, and compassion for the person that abused you, certainly. Can you talk a little bit more about that in terms of how you got to the point where you could forgive, where you could have compassion? I'm not there yet, and I'll share my story in just a bit. But, you know, I don't assume that you wake up one morning and, I'm going to put on my green shirt today, and I think I'll have compassion for this kid that did me wrong. I mean, what does it take to get there?
I think that's a great question, and it's a really worthwhile question for every survivor to ask themselves. You know, from a psychological and like a clinical standpoint, like if you're going to study, you know, Freud and some of these things, I think a lot of it comes down to ego. And that's a fancy way of just saying we hold on to a lot of this pain sometimes because it's become a part of our identity, and we can become very comfortable with trauma and with shame. And I think the piece that really liberated me was just the logic, actually. Like 1 in 6 is 17%. I'm not a freak. It's actually more normal than anyone would think. So once I started to feel like I wasn't alone, then I started to feel like, well, I'm part of a community or maybe a brotherhood or maybe a whatever. There's plenty of people out there like me. And this happens. This sort of thing happens. And so I'm not cursed. I'm not special. I'm not whatever. This thing happens. And I think it just, if you're going to follow the logic to liberate yourself and to give yourself compassion, what you have to apply it everywhere. You can't just be selective where 2 and 2 equals 4 for me, but it's 5 for him. It just, I don't know. I mean, that was really a big part of my recovery and my healing was real logic. And then for me, it was really digging into just having a softer heart for myself and realizing that, and even my sister. So of course, my sister and I have had to process this. And, you know, so we'll get to that part in a minute, you know, about healing happens. But my sister and I had to have some really deep talks before I could even publish and work on that book project, because I was going to be telling our story in a very public way and putting in print. And so, yeah, we had to kind of get on the same page and rehash everything. And I needed to feel her forgiveness because I'm her older brother. And traditionally, boys protect girls, older siblings protect younger siblings. And I was carrying all of this guilt for what I allowed to happen to my sister. This was the story I was telling for so many years. This is the nature. This is how shame works. I can't believe you allowed that to happen, Sean, not only to yourself, but to your little sister who you love. And shame does some very cold and dark things to us. And I think our liberation from shame is key to not just a survivor life, but a thriver life. Like it really is essential. So if I was going to release my own shame, why wouldn't I extend it to this other human being who very likely, now I don't know for sure, but that's the version of the story I choose. And I think it's as close to the mark as it's going to be. He naturally learned it somewhere.
Yeah, Sean, I can totally relate to that. I remember, you know, at 5 with my uncle, that's when it started. And our family, we got together a lot and there was a lot of cousins, 5, 4, 6. And I remember us playing house, but playing house and doing things inappropriate playing house, right? And so I just think about when you talked about with your sister, I think about that with my cousins. And I remember an adult peeking in on the room, seeing like there was something going on, didn't like barge in and like step in, like kind of just stepped away. But because I felt someone's eyes and saw, like, we all stopped and we all like really started to play with toys then at the time instead of like, you know, but again, if someone would have stepped in and been like, what's going on? Why, you know, but that didn't happen. And that would have been a great opportunity if an adult would have, you see something, you say something, right? Or you correct it. And I even think about if that's what we were all kind of doing together, what was all happening in different, and maybe me, it was me because I, that was what was happening to me. So I know I've talked about that on some of the episodes. And, you know, I know because I, what was happening to me, I now know that it, I was reenacting things that were going on with me, you know, touching or whatnot, playing house. And that it bothers me to know like that happened. And it bothers me to know like the adult like peeked in, saw something, but didn't do anything. But, you know, again, you can't hold that 5-year-old little girl responsible. I feel like I'm not going to hold myself responsible because it was being done to me by an adult and that should have never happened. Yeah. So I know Neil has a similar, you know, with the neighbor. And so just that whole, and then we've talked about where forgiveness has always been a thing that I advocate. You know, I forgave myself, but I got an apology from my abuser. You know, he said he was sorry. He never admitted what he did to me, to my mom, which irrelevant, but I got an apology and I took that apology and it like kind of freed me. You know, and the thing is like, you know, and then I still carry this person's last name. That's a whole nother added thing that I have to deal with. And I'm unpacking that as we speak. I'm thinking about what would that look like if I were to change my name? I'm considering the whole reporting aspect. What if I go now report, even though the statute of limitations? So it's just all those things, even at my age, I'm 51 years old and I'm still healing. And those things still come up and things that I'm trying to still unpack, things that I want to do, all the emotions that we go through, because healing is a lifelong process.
It is. I don't think you're ever truly finished, but it's also a very worthy process. Like, I'm probably 12 years now into my formal healing journey, or 13 years maybe. And I'm always pushing a little harder, digging a little deeper, learning something new. But also there's a bright side to this stuff too, is like turning your pain into your power.
Purpose, passion. Yep.
Yeah, all that stuff. All of those things are real. They really are. So if viewers are watching this and they're kind of maybe on the front end of their healing journey, I would encourage anyone to stay courageous, and that vulnerability is an absolute gift. I know for men, it's very tough, right? We're taught that we're not supposed to cry. We're not supposed to even be emotional. We're certainly not supposed to allow other people to abuse us, much less sexually abuse us. We're supposed to be macho. We're supposed to be all these things. And I got to tell you guys, it's a load of crap. Like, the bravest, most respectable men that I know are the ones that are straight up and open book, and the most liberated men, the most just free and carefree that in my life are the ones that I can have a deep conversation with and really connect with. And they can have that conversation with me too. And that's, to me, like part of what life is really about. And I know it's hard.
It's hard. You know, I'm at that stage. I'm earlier in my journey. There's some interesting parallels. You know, I was 7 as well when I was abused by my neighbor. You know, there's some of the circumstance. He was about the same age as, I think you mentioned, you know, he was 12, I think. He came over, knocked on my door. We just moved to a new neighborhood, and he said he had a Cub Scout project to do and came in the house and proceeded to abuse me. But I had no idea what was going on. And, you know, I didn't really start talking about this. I kind of talked about it in a few places, but it wasn't until we launched this season of Unspoken that I came out effectively, wrote a blog post and put it on social media. And every month we do this interview, and I'll be honest with you, and Candace, I haven't shared this with you before, but every time we record an episode, I have to, am I really doing this? Am I really like putting this out there again? And then every time we publish an episode, we put it in the audio podcast and we put it on our socials. I'm like, is this really what I'm doing? Like, it's almost surreal that this has become a part of my life. And I just feel like there's so much I'm learning from people like you and our other guests. This whole thing about forgiveness and empathy, you could be speaking Greek to me. I'm just not hearing it. The anger that I have is so strong, and a lot of it is directed at myself. So that's, I think, one of the things. And I'm not this initial thing where he came over and abused me under the guise of a Cub Scout project. I'm not angry at myself for that. I certainly am. I'm angry with him for doing it. I didn't know any better. I thought we could have been playing Matchbox cars, right? Like, I told my dad what happened when he came home because I had left a light on in the room. And I just, oh, yeah, so-and-so came over and we did this. His eyes got big. I had no idea what I was saying. But what I'm upset about are two things. One, my frustration at what I feel my parents didn't do after that episode in terms of getting help for me or any kind of authorities. But then what happened in the next year and the year after, over the summers, I engaged with in sexual activity with this guy. And in my mind, it was of my own volition. I was the one that was asking, like, literally, not like asking for it. I was dressed like inappropriately, like literally I requested it, or I suggested it. And I blamed myself for that for years. And I still blame myself. Intellectually, I get it. But in my heart, I'm upset at my 8-9-year-old self, which is really not fair. And I'm still struggling.
Can you say that again, Neil? The 4-letter F word, it's not what?
Well, I'm still upset at my 8-9-year-old self.
Yeah.
Which I know intellectually, it doesn't make, I understand it intellectually. I went to therapy and I understand I didn't have agency. It wasn't, there's no way that I was in control, even though I thought I was, or I made myself think I was, to be able to not feel I was being violated. But intellectually, I know it's not my fault, but in my heart, I'm still upset about it. And I'm still.
You feel you should have known better.
Yeah. Yeah. I was 9. Of course I should have. My daughter is 10 years old. Like, I'm younger than my daughter. And how is that even possible?
I don't know. Lust is pretty powerful. And some of these things, they're into our DNA, Neil. And you don't get to choose sometimes what excites your body, you know, especially in the developmental stage. I remember after this, like, having my body react the way men's bodies react regularly after this. And it just being sexualized at an early age. Yes, of course, you've got questions. You're curious. That's what little kids do. Little boys get into everything. I mean, I just find it very easy to imagine how it all happens. And it's really not that nefarious if you really think about it. The fact that it's yucky and sexual and taboo is the only part that makes it really bad. If you guys were setting ants on fire instead, or like shooting squirrels with a BB gun, would you cast the same amount of shame? And I know it's a different, right?
Not cool to shoot squirrels with a BB gun, but yeah, it's not, you know, it's not the same.
It's not the same, but it's not the same because you didn't know that was wrong at the time either. You know, I mean, I'm not trying to equate the two. I guess what I'm trying to say is, I think for all men, especially, well, anybody, just be really careful about what standards you're holding your 7, 8, 9-year-old self to, because it doesn't serve. It really doesn't. Some good old fashioned honesty about who you really were at 7 and 8 years old, I think it can be very liberating. And I found myself in that same, especially more recently, just giving myself grace. Sean, you didn't know any better. And here's, so for me, in my story, I intervened and I stopped. What stopped you, Neil? What stopped your episodes with this neighbor kid?
You know, I have no idea. My memories of that time are really hazy. I know when it, somehow I remember I was 7. It was right after we had moved in. But these episodes that took place, they could have taken place the next summer. They could have taken place daily. It could have been weekly. It could have been, you know, just 3 times in the summer. I don't know. And it could have happened the next summer and the summer after. Like, it could happen for 3 summers. It could happen, like, you know, skip a summer and after that. Like, I have no recollection. I mean, I remember physical acts, sexual acts. I remember things I can't say out loud, not yet. And it's just stopped at some point. I mean, I don't think that he moved. I know he went to military school at some point, but they lived next door. It was like 3 brothers. And we used to, even after the initial abuse, and I think in the middle of the other stuff, we're playing stickball. We lived on a dead end, on a circle. We were playing stickball and street hockey. And but at some point it stopped, and I don't know. I mean, the big thing for the initial abuse, after my parents came home when I was 7 and I told my dad what happened, we marched over to the neighbor's house and my dad confronted his dad. And I remember, I have a memory of his dad yelling, "Hey, "Hey, get down here," you know, and he came down the stairs, and then that's all I remember. Like, I don't remember walking back home. I don't remember a conversation at home. I remember a confrontation at their door, and that's it.
So the mind does what it needs to do to protect us, of course, when things like that happen. That's why you don't remember those things. But for me, I wanted to remember because I wanted to process it. I wanted to forgive myself. I wanted to inform my sister what happened so that she could heal and she could process it. And in that way, we were partners. And really what ended up happening is we became extraordinarily close. And she's one of my very best friends. She's the matriarch of our whole family, which isn't really, I mean, we're not really a big family, but she's it. Like, everybody goes to Kaylin for spiritual guidance, for confidence, for just anything. She's the rock of our family. And how remarkable, right? Somebody who and she's got her own stories too of later on in life and all these things, but to become what she's become despite of, or maybe because of, things she's endured. To me, that's like what this whole thing is about, is it's cheap to say what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. But good God, is it the truth?
It's so great that you're so close to her and that you were able to share that healing journey with her.
Yeah, of course.
Your journey started when?
So 2010, 2011-ish is when I became a client at the Healing Center in Milwaukee. That was what they called it then. Now it's Aurora Healing and Advocacy Services. But yeah, I started in a men's group, and every Tuesday I'd go for 2 hours. And I did this for 2-3 years. And so it got to the point where the whole intent was, and my girlfriend at the time, what a sweetheart. She found this place online and just said, "Hey, I think you ought to go here. And I think you ought to also talk with some of these men. If they have a one-on-one therapist, maybe you could sit down and get one-on-one help too." Like, how amazing. Like, I mean, that woman, she's actually from my hometown, but she's a real sweetheart. And in that regard, I credit her with, yeah, had she not done that, I might have been still drifting to this day in a fog, an emotional zombie, you know, not connected, these other things that I was experiencing because of my trauma. But yeah, these men's groups were great. I mean, 2 hours of kind of, you know, and every series, it goes the same way, right? Everybody's kind of quiet at first. And I would be the guy, because I'm like, hey, here's what's interesting. I would go into these things and I'd be like, I don't want to be here. This is therapy. This is, ew, like, I'm one of those sick, crazy people, right? All this taboo stuff that society used to talk about therapy.
Labels, the negative stigma.
What a bunch of poppycock, because that's where all the good stuff happens. You know, really, like, I would tell somebody who turns their nose up at therapy, like, you probably need it more than anybody. Yeah, for sure.
You wrote a book, right?
So what's that?
You wrote a book.
Yes. So yeah. I mean, the healing happens. That came, this is 2014 now. So I'm 3 years into my healing journey. These men groups are great because I hear some amazing stories of what some of these guys endure and then see what they are doing with their life. And some guys, they're still in a lot of pain. And for me, I just went into achiever mode after this episode, and I decided to cope by being like a good student. I became a jokester. I remember that. I just thought to myself, if I made people laugh, they would never look at me and suspect anything had happened. Or if I didn't draw, it was funny, like if I didn't draw too much attention to myself in terms of like from adults. So like, I just remember keeping a real even keel other than mathematics, which I loved. I tried to get B's in every class because I just did not want to be like, I did not want a light shine on me. The Healing Happens project was actually offered to my sister, but she was busy momming and doing other things. She said, "I think you should write the story." And so this was 13 different stories of people overcoming trauma to basically become a better version of themselves.
Oh, and you have the book.
Yeah, I have a copy.
Let's show that on the full screen. There we go.
This is my copy. And I remember Sean giving it to me. And Sean, so, you know, you were in your healing journey and then the Thrive Award happens, you know, which is in 2017. I know you were doing a lot with promoting, like, I think your story. I think you were helping to even lead, I heard, some of the men's groups or some of the group sessions, because you were just really starting to like be that advocate. And here's some pictures of the Hope Shining Blue event, which we have all three of us have now experienced together. The event itself is a celebration of survivors. And Sean here is getting the Thrive Award for someone who's thriving in life and far along in their healing journey and being an advocate and in this area of advocacy. So that's you, Sean. And I got to experience it this past year, April. So it's such a big honor and just the celebration and the happiness and joy, you know. And I remember just knowing like I found my place, I found my people. You know, like I found where like it's okay to be talking about these things and then celebrate your story, like in the journey and the healing journey. So yeah, so as far as you getting the Thrive Award, that was in 2017, but it had a lot to do with your advocacy work for the men, I believe, correct?
Yeah, I mean, in those, so just like you're saying, in the men's groups, after about two or three of them, I'd become pretty comfortable telling my story. So then I would be the guy to go first. And most guys, they would go for a session or two, and then they'd, or a cycle. And each cycle is like 12 weeks. So I did seven of these, which is like, I don't know, 84 weeks, but it ended up being like 3 months because they space them out, whatever. My point in all of it is I got such a charge and just a good feeling from opening up to these other men so that they know, like, oh, he's sharing all of that. I was just going to say, I'm a survivor and my name's Dale. But since Sean pretty much spilled all the beans, I guess I feel like I can do that too. Wow. And he does it so effortlessly and he seems so comfortable. And that is what I wanted. I wanted to make it look comfortable and okay to share all the details or whatever. And every person has their choice what they're going to share. But I found myself more and more liberated, more and more healed the deeper I went, and then these other men would follow. So that was a big piece of it. And actually, my chapter in Healing Happens is called Disclosure, Sparking a Victorious Cycle versus a Vicious Cycle. We know a vicious cycle like alcoholism or addiction or sexual abuse, it gets worse, right? Because it gets passed down. No, this is a victorious cycle. When I tell a couple people and then they tell a couple people and we have this disclosure, that is how we heal on a bigger scale. And the one thing that perpetrators fear most is you talking about it. They don't have the asylum anymore. So that's the way to really beat it. I mean, if we really want to get serious about beating sexual abuse, we got to get serious about telling everybody like, hey, the minute something ever yucky happens to you, talk about it, right? Because that's the only reason. And it's okay to talk about it 20 years later, but if it's 20 minutes later, 20 hours later, 20 days later, that's how we can probably, you know, if we really want to get serious about it. But who knows whether we get there or not, but that's kind of part of the answer. But anyways, I guess my point really is I was actively promoting the book on like Facebook and stuff like that, like out in front of God and everybody. And then Molly and Tiffany, who you know from the Morning Blend, you know, here in the Milwaukee market, they've had me on the show a couple of times talking about it on live television, you know, unrehearsed, unscripted, unedited. And that as well reached a lot of people. And so I had just basically decided that anybody who asks me to talk about my story, I'm saying yes, just like how we're here today. I feel like I'm doing what I'm put here to do. And if I can liberate other people from the same type of shame and guilt and nasty, yucky resentment, anger, all the negativity that I put on myself, if I can help other people get to the same point, I just know that we're all better off for it. Our communities are stronger. We have stronger individuals. People not just survive, but they have a chance to really thrive. And that's kind of what this whole process is all about for me. And that's why I'm here today. It's to tell people like there is a pathway forward. There is abundance. There is love. There's anything you can imagine and more at the end of it. You do have to push, and growth happens outside our comfort zone. When we stay in our comfort zone, we don't grow.
And Sean, I just have to say, when I reread it before we got on this podcast episode today, but your final paragraph, it says, there is hope for the future and we can conquer the shame that stifles our journey of personal growth. My goal in this life is to reach as many survivors as I can to help break the chains of shame and reintroduce hope into their lives, if by no other means than telling my story first so that they can start to heal from theirs, just as someone else did for me. I loved that final paragraph in your chapter. It was so amazing. And I mean, the healing journey, like we said, it's lifelong. And, you know, I want to talk a little bit about, I know at the Hope Shining Blue, you kind of heard my story on video. You saw the video, but I want to put a plug in for my book. My book is titled Unspoken. For anyone watching, listening, tuning in, you know, Unspoken, the one word, because I wasn't supposed to tell. And that's kind of why it's called the one word, and just tells my story, you know, being abused by two family members that you love and trust, right? That's usually what it is. It's not the stranger danger. It's someone that you know and trust. But, you know, in your case, it was someone that was babysitters, another, was it a brother or a friend?
I don't know if it was a little brother or just another assignment, you know?
Another assignment. Yeah. So, it's just, like I said, it's just these stories, and that's why, and then the podcast was formed. So I'm just so grateful that I can dedicate this season to the male survivors and give you all a space. So that's a plug for the book. And I have a swag store, so make sure you check out your swag, and you can visit me at www.candacesanchez.com. If you go to my shop, you can get a signed copy of my book, or you can purchase it on Amazon, whatever you choose to do. And then Sean, as a guest, you get a free coffee mug. So I'm so excited to ship you a lovely coffee mug. Neil is going to demo.
Ooh, look at that right there. Boom.
There's a white coffee mug.
I was just thirsty. I happen to have a mug near me.
So I have a white, it's a pretty big size. And then there's the regular, like a teacup. I have a chocolate colored coffee mug. So you get your pick.
It's not a teacup. The chocolate one is not a teacup.
It's a nice coffee mug. Yeah. So, and I know you mentioned you don't drink the coffee, but it's good for tea or putting your flavored drinks in there. So yeah, I can't wait to get you a coffee mug. And then, you know, as far as like with my personal story, I've now kind of, you know, aligned myself with other organizations, and I want to promote the NCAN, the National Foundation to End Child Abuse and Neglect, inviting Sean, you to help, you know, with this cause. Anybody listening, watching can donate to the cause. This is to raise awareness, prevention, advocacy, research to help us to end this child abuse and neglect, the stigma, right, that's out there, to change the narrative. And we have the walk in three different cities. We're in Denver, we're in Columbus, and we are bringing the walk to Milwaukee. And so there's just information here. You can visit ncan.org and click on the walks and get information or donate to the cause. So I wanted to make sure I plugged the walk. And this conversation, I know, Sean, you've really given a lot of great information. And I know when we talked, you mentioned some great materials, you know, resources for anyone that's struggling, you know, other survivors, male survivors, survivors in general. And you recommended the Four Agreements. I know you mentioned by Don Miguel Ruiz. You also mentioned that there's a lecture series called Living from a Place of Surrender. I think it was
Michael Singer.
Michael Singer.
Yeah. That's a lecture series. Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to plug that because I know you mentioned that was something really good, Living from a Place of Surrender. Michael, say the last name again. Sorry.
Singer, like a rock singer.
Like a rock singer. S-I-N-G-E-R. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then The Great Man Within. Was that a book?
No, The Great Man Within, that's a podcast available and as part of a mastermind I'm part of. But both of those, the Michael Singer, Living from a Place of Surrender, and The Four Agreements, I actually recommend those on Audible. And now if The Four Agreements, it's dealer's choice, whatever you prefer. But I really think it hits home better on Audible. But if the listeners here prefer to read, well, and then you can make notes in the book, et cetera.
I've read The Four Agreements, which I absolutely love. I go back to those Four Agreements pretty often. I have it printed out for my office.
They're so simple, but the best things in life really are.
Yes. And then you also mentioned when we were talking about resources, the Movement Mastermind. Can you talk a little bit about what the Movement Mastermind is?
The Great Man Mastermind is what I belong to. And I've just dumb luck. I joined it 3 years ago, as fate would have it, right before COVID started. So what a wise way to make it through COVID is with a group of 20 other high-performing, conscientious men looking to be and feel and perform their best. But there's a podcast available, and it's called The Great Man Within podcast. And there's probably 3 years worth of content there. The gentleman there is Dominic Quartuccio, and it's kind of just the way it sounds. It's like quart and then U-C-C-I-O. Nevertheless, if you were to do a Spotify or Apple Music search on Great Man Within podcast, you'd find it. A lot of great content there for just men. It's not all about sexual abuse or anything like that. It covers everything about just being a healthy male.
Mm-hmm. And like I said, I always love promoting, you know, what resources worked for you. That's really what this is about. Because we're really building community on this podcast. I feel with my podcast, building community of thrivers, people that are getting up every day. We're showing up, you know, when there's days that it can be hard. I think, you know, you go from that mindset of having a victim mentality to survivor mode, to really thriving, to really being happy with who you are, happy with the life that you have, finding gratitude in every day. You know, what are you thankful for? And, you know, speaking of gratitude, I think that's a great way, Neil, right? To kind of get ready to kind of wrap up and end on. So my book, the last chapter. So Sean, did you get a copy of my book yet? I wasn't sure if you had gotten a copy yet.
No,
if not,
I don't.
I'll have to get you one.
I don't have it yet. We should definitely square that up. Yeah.
Yes. Since you gave me one, I'd love to give you a copy and get that to you along with your coffee mug. So make sure we'll connect and get that delivered. But the last chapter is called Full Circle Blessings. So I always like when we're getting ready to close out our show here on Unspoken Conversation with Candace is asking my guests, and then I will ask my co-host, Neil, and then I will close out with, and I will ask you, what are you most grateful for? What are you thankful for today?
Oh boy, I guess I'm really thankful for my curiosity and just courage. And courage comes in a lot of forms. And what courage really means to me is that willingness to ask the extra question, to go just a little deeper, to get outside of my comfort zone just one more time or just one little bit in a positive way that I know will help myself. And as simple as that sounds, it can be difficult. But once you get it right a couple times and then you get rewarded, it kind of becomes how you decide to live the rest of your life. And so curiosity in general, asking questions is just as important on an individual level as it is on a community level, and challenging ideas and challenging story, like the story I was telling myself about what a bad kid I was growing up because of what I allowed to happen to me and a loved one. And that story was false. The real truth is, it got to a point where I defended my sister and I defended my family. And so without asking questions, without probing, without being curious, none of that's possible. So those two C words, courage and curiosity, I think I'm most grateful for that. And however I got that, however that was instilled into me, I'm not really sure, but I celebrate it every day.
Well, and celebration starts with the C too. So yes, we're definitely going to celebrate your courageous and that. I just thank you. Thank you for being a guest today on Unspoken Conversation with Candace. And Neil, what are you most thankful for? What are you grateful for?
Candace, I'm sure I sound like a broken record by now, but this is an incredible opportunity you've given me. When we first met last year, or even 2022 in April, and you know, I spoke at this panel for male survivors, and I made some comments asking women in the room to make space for men, to help men tell their stories and invite us to be on panels, etc. You stepped up. Before that session was over, you were already emailing me and chatting me up in the Zoom, and we were able to put this podcast together. And it is something that's very profound, because even today, you know, with Sean, I feel like every episode I get a little closer to something, to forgiveness, to empathy, you know, for myself. You know, that's only possible because we're doing this work. Sean, you talked about being in a group and doing the therapy work for years. I feel like I'm doing that every month with this podcast. And so I can't thank you enough. And Sean, I appreciate our conversation today and our conversations, you know, before, as we prep for the show. I appreciate you pushing me, and you offered to stay in touch and to help me on this journey. And I will certainly take you up on that.
Sean, again, you know, you mentioned curiosity. I think just the questions that you framed to Neil during this episode, you really making us ponder and reflect and think, I think that's just so helpful. And so that gift that you have of that curiosity and being courageous, it's just serving you so well and helping. You're helping Neil. I could just feel it during this episode. So thank you again. What I'm most grateful for is just having this opportunity, right? Most grateful for, again, having that, being brave and courageous and sharing my story as publicly as I did in the book. And now having this platform to allow a safe place for other survivors to be heard, to talk about these taboo topics, like to have it be the norm, because it is very common. You know, we're not alone in this journey, and just the healing itself. I think, again, healing is lifelong, and I'm still healing. And being 51 years old, having this personal responsibility, you know, not only am I an advocate for myself, but for others. And again, Sean, just thank you for being here. Neil, thank you for being my co-host. It's just extremely, I appreciate this opportunity to be able to do this. So thank you.
It's a great thing you're doing, Candace.
Awesome. Thank you, Sean. I appreciate you being on here. Neil and I will wrap up the show, but you were a pleasure to have. And thank you for being so or just real, authentic, and bringing Sean Hittman, the Thriver, to this episode. Thank you so much.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Thank you, Sean.
Thank you.
Wow, Candace.
Another amazing episode, wow. Neil.
Just when I think it can't get better, you know, this is the way that we've set this up. I'm happy to be doing what I do, the production work and some of the technical stuff behind the scenes, but you're bringing these guests together. You're introducing me to them effectively. I keep joking, I don't care if anyone's watching the show. I do kind of care, but even if no one's watching, what an education I'm getting. And you're introducing me to some fascinating people that I'm really learning from.
This network, I mean, this is a network, this is a support system. You know, we are resources to one another. The resources that we've all delved into for our own personal journey. I mean, just the possibility of this healing process that people can listen, people can watch, people can tune in, and people are watching, Neil. I mean, I'm happy to report that my podcast, watching and listening, that my podcast has reached 3,500 downloads, and that's just through the audio side. You know, when we look at statistics for video, who's watching, I mean, either way, this is going to be out there as a resource. So if someone finds it, hears about it through a referral, to me, that's all that matters. And, you know, Sean, I think even talked about like ripple effects. It has the ripple effect. There's the impact. And we definitely, when we come together and we have these important conversations, we are making an impact and making a difference. And so for that, like I said, I'm extremely grateful for you to be on this journey with me. Thank you.
I go back to something, and I think, I don't know if it was during the episode, I think our second guest, Kenneth, told me when I was stressing about, you know, how are we doing this on social media and how many people are watching and that kind of thing. The bottom line is that we're putting out something good in the world. We're putting out some important content. And at some point, somebody might watch the episode on Facebook, on Twitter, on LinkedIn, on YouTube, on my website. They might find it. They might hear my story, your story, whichever guest we're talking to that month, their story, and it might make a difference. It might give them something to think about. It might give them some hope. If nothing else, if it encourages them to reach out and get support, that would be great. So I really do try and hold on to that idea that we don't know how this is going to potentially change someone's life. I think I can hold on to the idea that it probably will change somebody's life at some point in some way.
I'm very confident that it will, definitely will. We are making an impact. That I know for sure. So, and we sometimes don't know how, we don't know who, but I know that it's, again, what Kenneth said, we're putting good things out in the world. And when you put good things out there, again, blessings upon blessings, I believe in that divine design, the attitude of gratitude, and somebody's going to watch it when they're supposed to watch it, right? It's going to fall into their lap, or it's going to stumble on their feet, or they're going to hear it from someone else. And that's when they need it. And that's what it's all about. So thank you, Neil. Again, thanks everyone for tuning in to another episode of Unspoken Conversations with Candace. Have a great night.
Good night.
Thank you so much for listening to this conversation about healing, encouragement, and support. Trust that there is power in speaking your truth and sharing your experience with others, because you can have an impact or even save someone's life. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram to stay engaged in our Unspoken Conversations with Candace. And if you have been impacted by trauma and need tools to heal, consider purchasing a copy of my book titled Unspoken, available on Amazon. Thanks again, and remember, you're not alone.